From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Robbie Feinberg with the news on this day in Maine, Monday, January 24th, 2022. Representatives of the Penobscot Nation, as well as environmental and health groups, are pushing for tighter regulations on what happens to liquid waste from a state-owned landfill in Old Town. The proposal aims to protect tribal members from potential dangers of so-called forever chemicals. Kevin Miller reports.
The state-owned Juniper Ridge landfill received more than 800,000 tons of waste in 2020. It also generated millions of gallons of polluted liquid runoff, known as leachate, that had to be hauled off-site for treatment. But Dan Kuzniers, the Water Resources Program Manager for the Penobscot Indian Nation, says recent tests showed the leachate contained 20 times as much PFAS as the state allows for drinking water. And he says the current treatment system fails to remove these harmful industrial chemicals before the leachate is discharged into the Penobscot River, which is a source of sustenance and cultural identity for tribal members.
Clean water is of utmost importance to protect these practices. These are not recreational uses, but legally protected rights.
Kuzniers was among several people who testified Monday before the legislature's Environment and Natural Resources Committee in support of a bill that would require treatment of Juniper Ridge's leachate to remove PFAS. The chemicals have been widely used as industrial coatings for countless products for decades, but some types have been linked to serious health problems. And PFAS hotspots are now cropping up around Maine as a legacy of the state's industrial past and history of using sludge as fertilizer. There are currently no wastewater facilities in Maine equipped with the technology to remove PFAS. The plant serving Madison and Anson recently received federal funding to install a new treatment system, but that system won't be operational until next year at the earliest. A representative for the Maine Department of Environmental Protection says that while the agency agrees with the intent of the bill, the department doesn't have the staff or money to complete the research and rulemaking that would be required. Instead, the DEP says Maine should wait for the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency to complete its research on PFAS and wastewater and set federal standards. Because Kuzniers and other bill supporters said the state can't afford to wait for the feds to act.
If we ever hope to allow Penobscot tribal citizens to safely eat fish from their river, it's imperative the sources of contamination be controlled. We urge you to pass this bill to take an important step to control PFAS from Maine-owned landfills and to show Maine as a leader in controlling PFAS.
The committee is expected to take up several additional PFAS-related bills this legislative session. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
COVID-19 hospitalizations in Maine are at sustained high levels, with 427 people receiving inpatient care today. 100 are in critical care, and 48 are on ventilators. Democratic and Republican leaders in the Maine legislature are pledging to work together on returning a portion of a projected state surplus to Maine taxpayers. But the two sides have different ideas for how to do it. Lawmakers are expected to dive into the issue next month after Governor Janet Mills unveils her proposal for a projected budget surplus that could exceed $800 million. House Speaker Ryan Fecteau, a Democrat, expressed interest during Monday's Maine Calling program in another round of one-time payments to taxpayers, but Fecteau also wants to devote a portion of the surplus to affordable housing and other needs.
I think it's really important that we recognize that some of these dollars some of the surplus revenue can be used to address some of the biggest needs that our state faces. And I think we need to find a balance between doing all of those things.
The Republican leader in the Maine Senate, Jeffrey Timberlake, says he prefers tax cuts over one-time checks, although his caucus members are open to discussion. And he says Republicans also want the surplus used to address a long-standing staffing crisis that has forced numerous nursing homes to permanently close. The Maine Attorney General's office says it's reached a $2 million settlement in its lawsuit against the personal representative of artist Robert Indiana's estate. The AG sued Rockland attorney James Brannan for allegedly paying excessive fees to himself and four law firms he hired while defending Indiana's estate against litigation related to copyrights and production rights. According to a press release from the office of Maine Attorney General Aaron Fry, the combined fees exceeded $10 million. Fry says he sued Brannon and the law firms because the sole beneficiary of Indiana's estate is a charitable organization, the Star of Hope. And every dollar unnecessarily paid to Brannon and the firm, says Fry, quote, was another dollar unavailable to the charity to fulfill its mission and Robert Indiana's vision. Robert Indiana is best known for his pop art image of the word love. He lived in Vinyl Haven in his later years until his death in 2018, and had established the Star of Hope to restore his residence on Vinyl Haven into a museum and art center. 14 school districts in Maine will add or expand public pre-K programs this fall using new funding from the state. The roughly $3 million in grants comes from the Mills administration's Jobs and Recovery Plan, passed by the legislature last year, and allocating nearly $1 billion in federal money. The new grants will allow schools in Greenville, Kittery, Appleton, and Yarmouth to create pre-K programs. Several other schools will expand existing programs. The state says the new money will expand access to pre-K for more than 500 children. About 5,500 kids are enrolled in public pre-K across the state. Another set of pre-K grants from the state will be offered later this year. Colby College has settled with five athletic coaches over discrimination charges they filed with the Maine Human Rights Commission and Equal Employment Opportunity Commission last year. Nicola Grisco reports.
The women argued that they did more for less pay compared to other male coaches at the college. They made various charges under federal Title VII, Title IX, and Maine discrimination laws. In a joint statement, the attorneys for the coaches and the college say they resolved the claims, quote, constructively and amicably. But attorney Kelly Hoffman, who represented the coaches, says under the conditions of the agreement, she can't discuss the details.
Constructive and amicably means simply that. It's easy for you to sort of come to the conclusion that if it wasn't constructive and amicably, then there would have been a lawsuit that would have been filed in state or federal law, because that would have been the next step. So you know that the case was settled earlier, and that's how the process is supposed to work in Maine.
The women coached softball, lacrosse, Nordic skiing, soccer, and field hockey at the Waterville campus. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Nicola Grisco.
And in the weather tonight, some light snow moving west to east across the state. Lows of about 1 degree in the north to 17 in the south. Snow showers will continue tomorrow, likely just a coating to a few inches, with the most around Penobscot Bay. Highs from the teens to the mid-30s, north to south. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. And coming up on Maine Calling at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning, we'll be joined by economic experts to discuss which economic indicators they'll be paying close attention to during 2022. We'll discuss the impact of the pandemic on Maine, including inflation, the housing market, unemployment, and more. I'm Robbie Feinberg. Thanks for listening.